The reason being was the fact that we could potentially produce a product, which we are now doing, which would be seen as one of the best. I always believed that Australia was a high cost production zone versus the rest of the world. That being the case, we've always been of the opinion that we should be producing the best and asking the most money for it. From breeding, it takes us 3 years to actually put a bit of meat on the table.
Jason, talk us through the operation you've got here. How many bulls and cows, and are they full bloods and any other breeds on the place?
Our full blood herd is approaching 60 full blood females. So that's full blood Wagyu, which is Japanese or black, Japanese black heritage. So their genetics can be traced all the way back to Japan. And we join over 400 Angus females, probably closer to 450, trying to grow that a bit more as well. That produces the lion's share of our meat product, and that's known as a Wagyu F1 product.
Do you use AI or embryo transfer?
We did initially. AI is something we'd probably looking at again this year for our full blood herd. Our initial Wagyu herd came in as embryos, that's how we started with as little as 10 embryos that cost me an arm and a leg.
What's your secret? I've noticed natural and improved pastures. Do you grain feed as well?
Yes, we supplement everything.
At what stage of production do you supplement?
Basically from the day the cattle are weaned. For our meat product, we will continue that supplementation right through, until they reach 750 kilos plus for steers and 700 plus for females. In the last 200 days of feeding, it's mostly that supplement that they're receiving. It's important with Wagyu. It's not necessary to supplement, but it's important. The program is probably more in depth than what meets the eye. So at what stages we feed and how we change the feed is probably a little bit more in depth than the actual ration itself.
What specs do you meet? What do you aim for?
We aim for a marble score 4 or more. Ideally, we really like longer term, we're aiming to really go 5 or more. Our average at the moment, I think, sits at around 5, but we want that to be our bottom. As far as meat quality goes, okay, marbling is the first thing we look at, but then we have the aspects of fat colour, meat colour, and that type of thing, which MSA sort of get into, which help us monitor it.
Well, let's talk about MSA or Meat Standards Australia. You're a finalist in MSA's Eating Quality Awards. To even be in the running, 4,500 suppliers, but you have achieved outstanding compliance rates as well as eating performance. That's a pretty huge slap on the back out of, more than 4,000 other producers.
Yeah, we were pretty excited when we heard. The whole time we've just been striving to try and achieve the best quality eating product we could. So we had no idea that it was shaping up to be that good though.
How do you reach these top compliance rates? Is it a mix of good husbandry practices, great genetics and feed?
It's all those. The environment and management also play a part. So, we're in a good cattle area here. We try not to handle cattle in extreme weather conditions. And we definitely try not to truck them to the abattoir when that's occurring. We don't want to be trucking them when it's 45 degrees plus. That's a 400 odd kilometre trip to the abattoir. So little things help the compliance that way. Obviously they're all fed similar, but I have seen Wagyu cattle not be MSA compliant solely because they've been trucked during extreme weather conditions. That was my theory. Not many people believe me, but that's what I put it down to. So it's a combination of everything.
Can we go back to Casino and how does that run? Do you send your beasts over there and have someone from your company watching it?
Basically, that someone is me. I don't go over there all the time, but it's getting to a point where we'll have to probably employ a third party to be over there due to the amount of processing we're now doing. Casino have been pretty good to work with, and we started off as quite a small operator there. And, we've grown and they've been quite helpful and supportive, even though that in the whole scheme of things we're probably a pain in the butt being
small. A small operator. Well, yeah. How many beasts would you put through there and how often?
So at the moment we're monthly and, we try and do 2 decks of cattle. So that's at that size. around 30 head, maybe 33 to 4 head, so depending on whether they're steers or females. We do that monthly, hopefully going to be start doing that fortnightly, halfway through the year.
Let's talk about marketing. You've got your 750 kilo steer, you've trucked him 400 kilometres to Casino. What then? Who's the market? Who gets the best bits of that steer?
Some of the best bits end up in Sydney, Brisbane, Melbourne or Perth, and then we might, you know, ship the rest to China or Korea, but 80-90% of what we do ends up to our main domestic buyer, which is Coles, and they market the meat through their, what they call their next generation stores, which are stores with a meat servery. I think it's 14 stores at the moment nationally, and yeah, our product's sold there.
Interestingly enough, they don't buy a whole beast.
No, just the steak cuts, your fillets and your porterhouse and your rumps end up getting sold there. We do a couple of other little products with them, some gourmet sausages and some cooking fat, but the rest of the cuts, you know, really end up mostly going through the Asian markets in the capital cities or literally, you know, being shipped to Southeast Asia somewhere.
Are they shipped as box beef, you know, chilled or frozen?
Yeah, so chilled or frozen, both. China at the moment is mostly frozen. However, they're starting to understand beef a little more and starting to inquire about chilled products. Korea is chilled.
And is your product shipped or flown in?
We mostly fly in, being a high-cost item, and we simply don't produce the volume to fill up a sea freight container at this point. So at the moment, we're flying it around. Hopefully, we'll get towards some sea shipment later this year. It's a couple of B-double loads. It sounds easy enough when they come out of the paddock, but when they're gone for a feeding program, and there's a lot in it and a lot of value and a lot of cost. Yeah, it's their demands there. That's where we're aiming for.
What needs to go right for that to happen?
Keep going on the track we're going on, I think.
What's the biggest challenge?
Cash flow. You know, each Wagyu at the moment, you can nearly say, owes you $3,500. So for every one of those animals that we feed, that's what they owe us. That's the cash flow they have tied up. So that's the biggest challenge. We're undertaking a fairly large infrastructure project here just to feed a few more and to do things a bit more efficiently. We'll never be a feedlot as such. It's just about feeding and supplementing and finishing.